a fucking lockdown. Mass hysteria. Mass hysteria.
We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it.
But don't let me touch you.
Even a year, but I'll be there for you, washing my hands all day.
I'll be there for you,
standing 6 feet away.
I'll be there for you,
'cause you're there for me too. You're still in bed at 10, your boss guides you at 8, the Walt guy brings you breakfast. Crazy uncle's been saying for years, the apocalypse is coming, so stay home, keep watching Netflix, but
I'll be there for you,
cleaning all surfaces, I'll be there for you.
What are friends? remember friends? Just the term of having friends. I don't know what it's like to have friends anymore. I have not seen any of my friends in months.
Yeah, that's like how I live, so.
Yeah, I guess.
The taste of this life, baby.
Yeah. I mean, for all those introverts, I mean, this is easy.
I wouldn't say that, but I do feel more prepared.
All right. Okay, well, hey, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of our show. I'm Tom, here with Catherine. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
Bringing you in with a little fun take on the Friends theme by Michael Rose and a bunch of guys playing instruments on Zoom, which tends to be the new funny thing to do nowadays, and just make a parody song of anything and just put coronavirus in. So every show I'm just searching for, like, coronavirus song, and I find it.
Congratulations. You know, I wish they had changed I'll be there for you. I wish they changed that. Like, otherwise, still, I don't know. Just wish that was changed, too.
Yeah,
that lyric.
Yeah, you're right, because nobody's there for us. We're all alone.
Well, yeah, it doesn't quite fit, but also, like, if you're going to sing it in your head, you want a new lyric to sing, right? It's kind of the same. In my head, it's just I'm singing the same thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they did kind of miss a note on that one. Everybody, how you doing out there? Hope everybody's having a great Thursday. Today is April 30th, 2020, a Thursday. And for us, it's day 48 of quarantine. Wow.
That's a big number, and yet quite small.
Exactly, and yet quite small. I don't know, man. We were even talking before, like, recording this show. We were like, what are we going to talk about? Like, we've kind of hit that plateau of, like, man, we've really covered all the angles of isolation and quarantine.
Even between us, like, just in our lives, you're down to, like, what are we talking about today?
Kind of.
Yeah.
For those that are out there keeping tally, congratulations, everybody. We broke 1 million coronavirus cases here in the United States. I guess that's a very sad and tragic round of applause, and we're over 60,000 deaths, 61,000 per my last check today.
Yeah, I think in the world there are 3 million confirmed cases, a little over 3, so we are approximately 1/3.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah, I mean, I'd say, hey, have you heard about that good news? But obviously, what is good news? I mean, we were talking about it even on the last show, just like, what are the things that we even look forward to now? It's like,
They're a ways away is the problem.
They're so far away.
There's nothing next month or, you know, even 6 months from now that I can say, yeah, we'll definitely be able to do that then.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like before the quarantine, it would be like, sure. I mean, it'd be like something like, oh, a new show's going to come out soon. It's like that's all life is now is watching fucking television, you know?
I hate to transition this early, but I'm going to go right into something I wanted to talk about, which
yeah,
was I read an article today that the BBC is discussing ways in which, first of all, they're already thinning out their programming so that they're showing fewer episodes of shows every week so that they can make it last longer.
The BBC is?
Yes. But they're really concerned, as I'm sure a lot of places are, that they're not going to have any new content to show when they do run out of this content that they're spreading thin. And they're talking about ways to overcome that. They said they're really quite dead set against having shows on Zoom because they said that people are, and I was sort of intrigued by that idea that maybe could there be a show on Zoom or a show where people are remote. They said that's already wearing thin for people.
Agreed.
That and what they really want is some big, you know, adventure, you know, some distraction essentially. So they're talking about quarantining full casts and crews as an option to make new shows. And to me, like, we do work in the film industry, well, whatever, the industry, television production industry. And I can't imagine, I mean, that sounds horrible, honestly. It's like being sequestered for a jury, but for months.
I know.
Like, you can't go home to your family at night. If you don't work on the same set as your wife or husband, you don't see them either. You don't see your kids. You can't go to the doctor.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure how PAs or runners are supposed to do their jobs. Mm. Like, how do you go acquire something that you didn't already have that you brought to set the first day? What if you got to buy a cable? Like, how do you do that? If you're all in quarantine, does that bust your quarantine? It seems pretty extreme to me, but that's something I've heard they're talking about, which is interesting but terrifying.
Yeah, there's a lot more questions than answers. The only thing I can relate to in that is, like, and I have done this in the past with my working in production, is, you know, going somewhere remotely with a crew. Like, I used to work for NBC Sports, and they would, you know, send us overseas to do a reality show. So you're, like, there for 2 weeks with the same crew. You're kind of eating together. You're working together. And then you kind of have, like, your after-hours leisure time together. I will say a major television show, though, with multiple episodes or a season would be months. And to be honest, even in the 2 weeks I was out with these people, I couldn't have done longer than 2 weeks with these people. No way.
I've done a couple of weeks also, and it's exhausting because you see the same people day in and day out. You get sick of each other's faces.
Yeah.
You get sick of talking to them. You want to go see your family.
Of course.
You know? And then imagine how, like, frustrating it would be if you're on the road. Okay, I'm in another city. I can't just go see you. So it makes it a little easier. Okay, I'm in a hotel.
Yeah.
Whatever. If you're in your home city.
I know.
You're in London making a show in London and you can't go home at night.
Huh.
I just can't imagine the frustration.
Well, it's interesting to hear that the BBC is already starting to kind of think of these ideas. And I mean, I've read very little about the film and TV industry. I read, like, in Variety an article that had said, like, they are also getting kind of committees together to try to figure out, like, hey, what are the next steps here to actually start congregating crews and to start ramping production back up. And yeah, I mean, it's just going to have to be all new practices all around. That's the problem with the film and TV industry, is it takes a village to make stuff, and it's a very hands-on industry. Everything from what you're eating to touching gear to makeup to miking people up with sound. It just is.
It's
really tough to figure out, like, how do we do this? And then again, you know, maybe this is the way to do it. It's just saying, like, hey, check it out. We got to keep everybody together. We need to know where you are at all times. We need to test you. We need to take your temperature. You need to be screened. I don't know.
The screening and temperature taking don't identify asymptomatic people who are spreading, though. And then if you go home to an elderly parent at night, well, that's dangerous.
Bye-bye, grandma. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I guess I'm glad that we're somebody in our industry is out there thinking about how to make this happen. But it is, like you said, they really do have to reinvent the wheel here. This things can't quite go on the way they have been. I did also see in that same article, I guess I'll send it to you so you can link to it if anybody's interested.
Yeah, that'd be great.
In the same article, I saw that they're also discussing sort of simpler measures like camera tricks, you know, like having actors stand 6 feet apart but appear to be closer. But even so, like you said, changing batteries, somebody run and get me a cable, putting on makeup, all those things you can't quite do from 6 feet away. So I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I mean, from an actor's standpoint, and I guess just from TV and film magic, I mean, lenses, camera placement, things like that, you could probably deploy that kind of trickery, but it's just...
That only works in that one situation.
And again, you're just... It's the logistics. The logistics already in making a movie is like a moving circus, and I can't imagine now a moving circus where it's like, guys, we got to be as careful as we can that we're not spreading this fucking virus around.
Yeah, and we've said this a lot, but, you know, film and TV sets are just like other companies, and maybe more so in the sense that bad news on set affects the outcome of whatever it is. Like when somebody dies tragically on a film set, that film is not going to do very well. So if that, if you start spreading, if it's like, oh, this film set was the site of, you know, 40 cases and 3 deaths, that movie is not going places.
It's a PR nightmare. I mean, right before this whole thing kicked off in, what was it, like mid-March-ish?
Oh, God, I don't know.
I remember.
February, I don't know.
And this was back when I was still going into work regularly. A production that our company was working on in Chicago got wind of a person that had basically gotten COVID-19, tested positive, and that had been on a set at one of the places and had actually come into our facility in Chicago, had been kind of targeted as, hey, this person came in. And I just saw the ripple effect of the shitstorm that that caused, literally right down the line, people going, oh, shit, now maybe I have it. Oh, shit, I was around my elderly parents. So it is truly an incredibly sensitive thing that it's going to take a lot of work to get this right in so many industries. So,
and it's going
to
be more expensive. That was another point that this article made is, you know, certainly having a name actor like, you know, I don't know who's big on the BBC, but whoever it would be, having a named actor, a big actor stay for months when they could go home is going to be a lot more expensive. And I would think they might have to pay crews more, too. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know how the pay structure will work, but yeah, I mean, if they're going to just completely take you out of your regular life, I mean, I will honestly say, though, when you're working on a TV show or a movie, you don't really have a lot of time. You work very long hours.
The crews
sometimes are working 6 days a week. It takes up a lot of your life. But again, there's that reprieve of I get to go home to my wife and kids at night, or I get to go home to my life at night.
You'd be surprised. Just the same way quarantine has surprised me and the little things I miss, you'd be surprised how important it can be just to sleep in the same bed as your significant other or to kiss your kid on the head. I don't have a kid, but I can imagine. Just to be in your own space for just a few hours, even just to sleep, is restorative.
That's true. It's going to be wild. But, you know, that is true that I think the gimmick of like, hey, we're all talking remotely on Zoom and on the internet. I just saw, I think it's tonight, they're airing a Parks and Recreation like special, which is supposed to be all just that theme of like, they made such a big deal of like, we got all these actors back together. Yeah, you cheap bastards. Of course you did. They're all sitting at home. So you paid Chris Pratt, you know, $80,000 and said, hey, man, we just like, you know, you say these lines into your fucking computer camera. And that's that special, you know, but it is getting old. I agree that as we churn and burn through this content, which is obviously a lifesaver because it helps pass time, it's actually the one thing sometimes I look forward to every day. It's like, oh, cool, get to watch another episode of this show. It's going to run thin, and we're going to run out of shit. So, God, I'm hoping that some kind of solution happens, especially for me because it is my industry and your industry. So I'd love to find that innovation that just says, guys, we can start getting back to work.
Agreed. Yeah.
I don't know, though. I mean, I just don't know. And that's it, too. It's the frustration of not, we talked about this today. It's the frustration of just way more questions than answers. There's no answers, and there's no answers that seem like they're coming soon to provide any kind of, like I said before, good news. And it's just down to the point of it. It's just like total cabin fever, very frustrated, irritable. It ain't a good thing, and it ain't a good look, and I know everybody's wearing it, so.
Yeah, nobody can see the future, obviously, so we've all... I know I have just been sort of imagining the future, as we all do all the time, I'm sure. But my imagination of what it's going to be like has only gotten bleaker and bleaker as like the weeks have rolled on and the news has come and gone. It's it does not look good. I mean, yeah. Granted, it is all in my imagination, but I can imagine I won't be at a restaurant for a year plus because I go to restaurants to have fun, not because I can't cook. I go because it's enjoyable, because it's fun to see other people, to eat a new thing, to sit outside, to
let go of that.
Yeah. So I'm not going to be at a restaurant unless it's fun again. And it's not going to be fun for a long fucking time.
I think
you
that's
can't travel.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the things we talked about, was like, it sucks because, granted, you know, eventually things will lift and they will say, hey, everybody, you can go back out again. But the reality is the looming anxiety that is going to exist, especially for people like myself, for you, and honestly, for any kind of, I don't know, person with a fucking brain, you're going to be in a packed public place and you know it's going to be part of your mind just going, who in here has it? Am I going to get it? You know, it's like, ugh. The feeling of being in close confines with a big group of people is still terrifying.
Honestly, at this point, even the idea of being indoors with other people freaks me out because of that study they did. I'm sure we've all seen the graphic of how a sneeze travels through the supermarket aisles. I don't. Oh, and there was also, I believe there was also a restaurant that they did a study that they determined that,
yeah,
like,
that was scary.
Yeah. What was it?
The air conditioner.
That the air conditioner had spread the disease through and made several people sick. And it's like, I don't even want to be indoors with other people.
I know. It's, again, it's just, and here we are, you know, we're living here in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's just obviously fucking gangbusters here now. Brian Kemp, I think tonight at midnight lifts the stay-at-home order for the entire state. Granted, I think that a lot of mayors and other, like, cities and districts around Georgia are still enforcing and saying, please be smart and don't go out.
They can ask it, but I think part of his order to open businesses was to say that this supersedes your order,
basically,
so you can't change it.
It basically, not, no pun intended, trumps everybody else's kind of governance.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, it's just that it's like...
We've come to where South Carolina is asking people not to go to Georgia.
Yeah.
Don't cross the state line.
Oh, yeah.
And I think part of that, and this is part of the reason I'm so nervous again, I'm more nervous than I was 2 weeks ago now because people are getting out and mingling, and therefore more people have been exposed to it. And the likelihood that I'm near somebody who was near somebody
is greater.
Who was near somebody is much greater.
It's just, and that's it. It's just that it's like everybody's starting to get a little bit lax. We're, you know, we made the comment the other day, oh, wow, look, traffic seems like it's picking up again.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it seems like parking lots are getting a little fuller. And it's just that it's like, what's going to happen? We're going to have a huge peak in cases again, and we're going to set ourselves back even further. And it's just, you're not even just seeing it here. I just read something the other day about Gavin Newsom having to put out an executive order in California to shut down most of LA County beaches because apparently last weekend it was like it was summer. People were packed surfing out at the beach. Like, you know, I understand how hard it is to do this, you know, and that's it. And it's just that the patience of people is going to wear incredibly thin. And there's this sense of, like, revolt that comes from people, you know? And the reality is you can't cage people up forever. And I guess it's just kind of the toll that this thing will take eventually is it's going to be the people that are so eager, that are so desperate to break free, that they will go and live on the edge. They will risk their lives to get a little taste of what they loved back.
But if I'm being honest, I'm close to that. I'm close to that idea of, like, okay, enough is enough, right? We're all completely fucking fed up. And so these people are no more, I think, fed up than I am. It's just I guess I look at it and go, okay, as much as I want to do these things, I just can't. And it's like, I guess it's a willpower thing, but that's not quite the right word. It's maybe it's my fear I don't know exactly what force it is that's opposing to say, look, I know you want to, but you're not going to. But I think there's a lot of people that whatever that thing inside me, that other voice that says, no, you can't do it. I think that voice is a lot quieter for a lot of other people, and they're out there. And I get why they're out there, because I want to be out there too. I just can't.
And I think what you're seeing too is you're seeing all this like other kinds of revolt. And like I just told you today, in Michigan, a bunch of armed protesters stormed the state building there, like
that's
literally
insane.
With armed weapons. And the pictures were just hundreds of people in the Michigan State Building, crowded, screaming in each other's faces, nobody wearing PPE. And what you have now is you have this group of people in this country that feel like what they're doing is fighting against a form of tyranny. And what's really crazy to me is in those people's minds, in the deep depths of their minds, they will literally compare themselves to like the fucking patriots of the Revolutionary War fighting against redcoats. You know what I'm saying? Like they've taken up arms. There's such pride in that. And that's an awful mix match of obviously the gun culture in this country too. And it's just like, does anybody really see how fucking crazy this is? Like, it's crazy. It's absolutely out of control. And all you're really watching when you see that on news is hundreds of more people that at least one or two of those people is now sick, or a possible person has spread something to somebody else, because people don't want to listen. They just want freedom.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of people who have that sense of righteousness. That they're doing what's right.
Yeah.
And they're fighting for freedom.
Right.
And,
but freedom against what?
Freedom, because
you feel like you're being controlled, right? Because you're being told you can't do something.
Right.
Right. But see, that's the thing too, and it's just this giant network of miscommunication, and you know, people want to hear what they want to hear, they want to see what they want to see, and this is what we see. This is the product of it, is a bunch of people angry, revolting, you know, just to go get a fucking haircut. Or just to go back to work. And I understand from a financial standpoint, of course you want to work. Nobody likes this. Nobody likes sitting on their ass wondering where their next paycheck's going to come, or they can't pay rent tomorrow. We are in a form of desperation. But again, people don't want to look at data. They don't want to look at science. And that's our biggest downfall.
Yeah, I don't know. I totally get it. That's, I guess, what I'm saying is I really do understand this. I just... I can't do it myself. And I wonder, there's got to be a lot of people like us who just aren't going to go out even though you can. So then you have to think, like, you know, businesses that are open, their potential client base has just dropped by 50%.
I know.
You know, the whole thing, it's just it's a fucking spiderweb nightmare.
It is a lose-lose, because on one end of the people that like us are in quarantine and are just still nervous to dip our whole fucking feet back in the water. You know, then there's the people exactly that just, they're like, man, I need business. I need to fill my store up again. I need to sell my product again because I need to make money. So somebody's getting hurt.
There's fewer of us out there to go buy your product.
I know. And that's what's so hard about this. I don't know. Again, it's just like a little glimmer, a little tiny piece of hope would be great. That's all I'm asking
for. Let's talk small pieces of hope. I didn't see this article myself.
Bring on the hope.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's small. It's real small. Trust me.
even if it's a minute of this program, that's all I care about.
I mean, the hope is small.
Yeah.
But my mom mentioned seeing something about a drug that apparently Fauci said has been in some trials and has been working in terms of decreasing the length of illness by about 30% and also helping with the death rate.
Interesting.
That would be good.
Do you know the name of it?
I don't. I haven't even seen the article myself. I'm a little skeptical, but she said she's smart.
Well, if it's
so
not hydroxychloroquine or Clorox bleach, we're way ahead of ourselves.
There, yeah. No, it wasn't. So I think that's out there. Then, of course, you've got this like, oh God, what did he call it? Operation Warp Speed or something?
Yes, we talked about Operation Warp Speed. First of all, the president is obsessed with stealing words from science fiction. You know what I'm saying? It was there was Space Force, and now he's like just ripping right from Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek. He's going to call this Warp Speed.
So, yeah, that's a small glimmer of hope. I have some doubt. I've read articles that leads me to have some doubt that a vaccine is even possible. If it is possible, because apparently, I guess, no coronavirus. They've not been able to make a vaccine for any coronavirus yet at all. So this, if it happens, this would be the first coronavirus vaccine ever.
Like a Hail Mary, basically.
But even if it does work, first of all, we don't know if antibodies are going to last for very long. So
right.
You don't know if you get the vaccine, how long does it work, if it even exists. If we make the vaccine in the first place, then how long does it work? And then there's the potential that the vaccine will only do maybe what this drug has been doing, which is lower the death rate and maybe make the cases less severe.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, the only way I'm probably going to get back to normal life is if I've had a vaccine. So I guess I'm on board for Operation Warp Speed, I guess.
And basically, Operation Warp Speed is basically doing multiple tests on multiple possibilities of
I think
solutions, right? It's
putting into
mass production a bunch of different ideas of a cure.
Yeah, I think that's one arm of it. I think it's a multi-leveled approach. Mm. I think they really don't have, like, anything else in the administration.
Yeah.
They really don't have
lip
their
service.
Shit fully together. Like,
yeah.
It's not like the full plan is out or anything.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things I read was that they would be mass producing a bunch of vaccines before they know what works. Mm. So, you know, if one works and a bunch don't, they're throwing the others away. So that's wasteful.
Jesus.
And something about, and I'm not going to do this justice because I didn't do my research prior to this show, but something about they had to make the agreement with, I don't know, I guess probably the places producing the vaccines, that the cost burden would be on taxpayers and not on the companies. So I suppose if we have to throw away a bunch of vaccines and it costs millions of dollars,
we have to pay for it.
Yeah, it comes from the government, which I guess how else are you going to do that? But yeah, I think it's a multi-level approach. I don't quite know, but you know, and then you hope that of course they've done enough testing. We all go and get the vaccine in January and then, you know, we're like the dinosaurs. We're extinct.
Then there's just
now.
A huge fallout of the human race.
Yeah.
In the United States.
Lordy.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just at this point, it should be all hands on deck with trying to figure out innovation and pushing the science as fast as you possibly can. Because, I mean, that's the problem is like the idea of this going on for 2-3 years is absolutely daunting. And already we can see how exponential it's been in 3 months.
I think we'd be lucky to get out of this in another year from now. I mean, I think that would be lucky.
Yeah.
Because even if the best case scenario that they have this vaccine out in January and it doesn't kill us all, they're going to roll it out in phases.
And administer it all, too. Can you imagine that?
Administer it all, right. And it's just going to take time, man. It's going to take time.
It's going to take time. And that's what all this is. It's just all going to take time. And man, waiting sucks.
Ugh.
Is such the bottom line, is that the element of time has really crept up on everybody and everybody's feeling it.
And some of the shittier parts of life may have to get back to normal. We may have to go back to jobs.
Yeah.
We may have to, you know, wear masks everywhere we go.
Well, if you're Mike Pence, you don't have to wear masks everywhere.
But none of the fun shit. So the fun shit's a far way out.
Yeah, I mean, we got to get used to a world that we possibly aren't comfortable with and just a change, because it's not just going to go click of the fingers and, hey, you're all back out with your boys again at a bar. You know,
no.
It's going to be hanging out with your boys at a bar, but everybody's wearing masks and that bar may not be as packed as it used to be, you know, and
legally can't be. As
yeah,
packed.
Legally can't be. So there's going to be these little variations and changes. But yeah, I get it. It's just, it's a weird, tough time. I mentioned it before, especially like financially. We finally were able to get on the government website recently and find out that we are getting our stimulus check. That was a nice kind of surprise. So possibly the next few weeks we'll get the big old $1,200 check.
Yeah, I think they updated it, I don't know, like a week ago.
Right.
Was it over the weekend, maybe?
I don't know. You checked, and then you said you had found out, and then I went on, and they asked for my direct deposit information. So
yeah.
I guess I'll just be perusing the online bank, see if they popped it in there anytime in the next couple weeks.
Point being, though, yeah, I think there's new information up there. If you haven't checked in the last week, you definitely
should. Yeah, go check it out. Actually, if we can find that, I'll throw that link up in the show description as well.
Yeah.
It just is what it is, everybody. We got to do what we can. I'm on unemployment. I mean, no shame there. I've been luckily to get kind of break through that system, and it seems to be working all right. But for sure, I mean, down the line, we're both looking like, what are we going to do for work in a few months, you know? And that's the big old question mark.
It's daunting, but I'm ignoring it for now. You know, what the fuck can I even do about it? So
that's right.
Okay, so I'm gonna transition again. So just mentioned the word dinosaurs, which made me think about
Jurassic Park.
No, although that's a fun topic too. If you want to go somewhere with that,
I got nowhere to go with that.
Okay. I saw just this week the finale of the show Dinosaurs went viral again. Did you see this?
I did, because it was so like dismal and dreary for the time, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but the reason I think it went, it's been some X number of years since
I remember that finale show.
So
that was such a weird show for the time.
Did you watch the last scene? I did.
I totally,
yeah,
and I remember even watching it on TV at the time.
Well, I don't. Let's recap it. Do you want to do it?
Go ahead. If it's more fresh in your mind. I mean, for those people that don't know what we're talking about, for people that weren't born in that time, for one, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast. But secondly, Dinosaurs was a show that aired on, I think, ABC back in the 90s. And it was a very weird show.
Jim Henson.
It was a Jim Henson show. So for those of you that are used to like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie in the 90s, it was like human-size puppets. So like people in these big suits with like animatronic eyes and mouths. And it was about a family, a Simpson-style family that was just made up of dinosaurs. And go on, tell us about the finale.
Well, and it had a lot of actors in it. I want to talk about that for a moment. I think we discovered that Jessica Walter from Archer,
yes,
and Arrested Development was the mother.
Fran.
Yeah. There was some other voices. The daughter was somebody.
I remember was that Earl was the dad and Fran was the mom. And then I remember the big Triceratops boss guy,
yeah,
who like sat behind the,
yes,
desk. He was Sherman Hemsley.
From the Jeffersons.
From the Jeffersons.
Yes.
And he had a very distinct voice. And then obviously the most famous character was the baby. That's the not the mama,
oh,
bullshit.
Gosh.
That was,
yeah,
the most fucking annoying, like
that
everything
was,
during that time.
That was a scourge of the 90s for sure.
Yeah. It was like the Honey Boo Boo of the 90s. And it was like, it sold toys. It was like the Bart Simpson of that time too. Like the cowabunga. And it was like everything was,
it was
the baby
more like
toy.
Who let the dogs out? It was like that earworm. You couldn't get it the fuck out of your head.
They had a
not
song. Yeah. Not the mama.
Oh, here it is. Thank you. Sorry. I'm distracted because I'm Googling. It was Sally Struthers was the teenage girl. And I didn't know that until the other day when I Googled.
Totally. I could see Sally Struthers.
Yeah.
And then the brother, like there was like the hip brother.
Yes. That's a kid I don't recognize.
I mean, if you do think about the paradigm of that show, it literally, like, whoever created it was like, all right, so we're just going to take the dynamic from The Simpsons and we're going to make them dinosaurs.
The Simpsons would have been first, do you think? This
oh,
is
definitely.
91.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. The Simpsons was like late 80s.
Well, this, okay, so this lasted
maybe,
four.
89? I don't know.
I think, yeah.
I want to say Simpsons was like right there.
Well, this was 91 and it lasted four seasons.
Yep.
So that would be 95. So it must be 25 years since. That's must
wow.
have been what it was.
Yeah.
The 25 year anniversary.
For
I'm
sure.
guessing. I'm guessing now, but I think that must be right. 25 year anniversary of the finale. So, okay. The finale was horrible. The family, the dad of the show, his name again,
Earl.
Okay.
Yeah.
The dad of the show works construction for, I think,
he's
not
a
very
yeah,
good
he's
company.
A, he's a blue-collar dinosaur worker.
Yeah, he's got the little lunchbox and
yeah.
the hard hat.
Yeah.
And so he, I think, if I'm, because all I watched was the final scene, so
right.
I'm gathering some details here, but I believe he must have somehow become in charge of the company and made some really bad choices, which led to the Ice Age. And
ouch.
And they're all, the final scene is the family all wearing like fur coats
right.
inside
shivering.
Their home, shivering. It's snowing outside. And he gives a really quite rousing speech. It's actually worth watching in the age of like climate change discussions and everything, because that's what this was
a
all
lesson
about.
To learn people from dinosaurs.
Yeah. And he's like, you know, I didn't think about it because nature
yeah.
will always be there. You always think it's there. And technology seems so new and shiny. But, you know, turns out that nature won't always be there. Whatever the hell he said. So then they have this conversation and the baby gets nervous. Now, the baby seems to have been old enough to talk in this final episode. So the baby asks a question.
I feel like the baby always talked. It just talked weird, like baby talk.
But this was a little more like conversational. So the baby asks a question and they answer it, you know, and like the teenage daughter maybe was like, it's okay, we'll all always be together. And then it kind of like, you know, slow pans out, zooms out, whatever, from the window. It's all, you can see it snowing out. You can see their mailbox is covered. Everything's covered in snow. And then it shifts to a newscaster rounding out the news. Everything's, you know, weather, cold, whatever.
Sure.
And good night. And then he pauses and he says, goodbye. And that's it.
Wow. Now, see, I would have ended it differently, where just you see the meteor come and just fucking annihilate the planet.
But
let's just take it there.
Yeah, sure.
No, you're right, though. I mean, that is a pretty downtrodden way to end a show.
Ooh.
I want to say it was only on for maybe two or three seasons.
I just told you, four seasons.
Four? All right, it's a pretty good run. I bet it was very expensive at the time. Yeah, I'll post that up again in the episode thread for all those who don't know what we're talking about. But yeah, I mean, hey, talk about ahead of its time.
Yeah, it and knew. The climate change discussion for the early 90s was pretty...
very woke dinosaurs.
Yeah, woke. Yeah, there's the word I'm looking for.
That's hilarious. Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's crazy, man. It's weird to see how things back then kind of foretold the future we live in now. Not too sure how many things I can look back on and be like, oh, man, it was telling us about coronavirus, about COVID-19.
Well, this isn't that new of a situation. That's kind of the thing
kind
that
of.
I feel like these articles are missing the point. I'm going to, God, I have another thing to tell you about.
Good, because I got nothing to talk about.
Okay, I got another one. But before I even go into it, I just want to say, like, you know, the flu of 1918
right.
and even like cholera, all these things that these little outbreaks in history have mm-hmm. played out in the exact same way. So this was very predictable. Bill Gates said it a while ago. He was right, but also he couldn't have been wrong. This was always going to happen. And it was
inevitable.
Always going to play out this way
yeah.
because this is how it always plays out. Until you find the source of it, there's a certain level of everybody go the fuck home and don't talk to each other.
Right.
Then, you know, in the case of cholera, they discovered that it was in the water. So, you know, being at home didn't really help. But anyway, they send you home, you board up, you quarantine, and then they try to find a cure and they try to vaccinate and they try to fix the root of it. But in that time, you're at home, you're scared, people
yep.
are getting sick. There's what they used to do, like, I don't know, colored rags on the doors to indicate who was sick, right? So this, none of this is new. It's all quite trod territory, unfortunately. But okay, with all that said, another thing that went viral recently was a scene from Little House on the Prairie, which apparently is the entirety of the series is playing on Amazon Prime, maybe? Not
really. Get it that. That's probably a real watch.
Not real.
Michael Landon. My grandma used to sit and watch that. Like, I have vivid memories of watching
Little
House.
We were just, I was a little too young. I'm a couple
show.
Years younger than you. And
yeah.
I do remember it. I remember him dying. I remember people being really sad about it.
Yeah, yeah. I think he died. Spoiler alert for those of you that want to go binge it.
But that's apparently playing and people are at home and have nothing to do. So they're watching. One of the people quoted in the article was watching with their kids, bringing their kids up on it. It seems like a good thing.
This is what
kids.
Life's going to be like now, kids. We're going to be churning our own butter and tending to the cattle soon.
God, maybe we'd be better off. But anyway, there was a quarantine episode, actually a two episode arc, one called Quarantine maybe, and one called Isolation or something like that. I don't know.
It's funny because that whole show's about that basically.
Well, what they live out in the boonies, but it's
probably
not
like,
about
probably
quarantine.
Neighbors from afar, but probably not distancing themselves from those people basically.
Well, there's a little town apparently.
Little town on the prairie.
And the dad, like, it's everything we're going through now. The dad, Michael Landon, works with, like, a local, I don't know, doctor and maybe a local priest or something. And they're working on trying to locate the origin of the disease. And when he comes home at night, he has to stay far away and, like, kind of waves at them and then, like, isolates himself when he goes to sleep. And there's, like, a scene of people talking to each other through a window because they can't get close to each other. And it's everything we're going through now, but it's Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
Which, depicted obviously life a while ago, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, pioneer times.
Thank
basically.
You. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Oregon Trail style, but like,
was it that old? I don't know.
Yeah. It was like, you know, covered wagon times.
Really?
Yeah.
Hold
they
on,
lived
I'm
in like a cabin and all kinds of shit. I mean, we're really going there on this episode, really getting nostalgic with some retro TV.
Why not?
I hope you're all writing these down so far. Dinosaurs, Little House on the Prairie. So I heard somebody say, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It It started airing in 1974, went on for 9 seasons.
Ooh, that's back when nothing was on TV, though.
That's a
you know
long
what I'm saying?
Time.
Like, anything could have went on 9-plus seasons.
And it ended in 83, so I was not even alive when it ended.
Oh, I was probably watching reruns at that point.
Well,
syndication.
Yeah,
maybe.
If you remember it. Yeah, absolutely. And Michael Landon did die. I'll look up his death. That must have been, I must have been at least 3 or 4.
He died.
To remember
in the 80s. I remember that.
And it says that it takes place, revolved around the 1870s adventures of the Engels family.
The Engels.
That's right.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, again, here we go. TV somewhat relating to our situations now.
He died in 91. Did he get to see the first episode of Dinosaurs?
I hope he did. I hope he got to get a little taste of it. Now, and that comes perfectly full circle.
I'm done. That's all I got.
Good TV talk. And talking about TV, boy, do we need Dr. House right now. That motherfucker,
oh,
he'd have
fuck.
Already figured out where coronavirus came from. He'd have it down to a goddamn science. So if somebody could somehow get a real Dr. House on this, give him some Vicodin and put him to work, because we need his ass.
It's true.
All righty. Well, we've chatted. Let's round off the show like we always do. Let's do some questions.
Yeah, just a few.
Just a
do
few. A few.
I'm already these are
some table
intense,
topics.
Man.
I know they've been hit or miss, mostly miss.
They're
way too
just,
serious than I want them
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, I'm like in counseling right now. Okay, go.
Okay, here we go. This one again is weird, possibly not suitable, but here we go. what's your favorite part of coming home after a long trip?
Oh boy. I mean, obviously, I feel like for everybody, the answer's got to be sleeping in your own bed, right? I mean, especially our bed. We have
Big
a sleep
one.
Number bed.
Love my bed.
After our fire, that was the very first thing we ordered
oh,
was
yeah.
get
Wasted
a new
no
bed.
Wasted no fucking time getting that.
Yeah, no. I think we went and paid for it before we even had a place to put it. We were just like, just hold on to it. And the minute we have an address, you ship that motherfucker.
Bed
so
was
it's
number
the bed.
One.
It's the bed.
Yeah, I'd say bed and a shower in my own shower is nice. I mean, sure, if you stay in a nice hotel, maybe for a trip or work, you know, sometimes you're like digging the hotel shower. I just kind of like my amenities. I like, obviously, the feeling of being in my house, walking around nude in my home is always fun. I don't know. I don't typically do that a lot, but
having access to your fridge, like hungry,
yes.
get a snack.
Yes. I'm not like super limited, whereas traveling's like, well, I got to go to only a restaurant or only this place or try this new spot out. And that there's an excitement to that, but it's like the familiar is very comforting.
Or like it's a real bitch when you're someplace where you can't drink the water or you
yeah.
Or even traveling like around Florida, the water tastes gross out of the tap.
Florida water's gross.
You have to even to get a drink of water, you have to acquire it. So yeah, I miss the fridge too.
Alrighty, right. Next question.
Next.
From Table Topics.
Oh, good Lord.
This one took a turn, huh?
Yeah. If you were to be cremated...
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Where would you want your ashes scattered?
I would want whomever, hopefully my beautiful fiance, Catherine, and whoever of my family is still left at that time, to make a pilgrimage to the last Blockbuster video in Oregon and spread my ashes in the parking lot there.
You're going to be parking lot ashes.
Yes. Let them blow away. I don't care. As long as they're there. The last Blockbuster. You?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
on the couch?
fuck you.
I'm kidding. Where would you like your
fuck
ashes
you.
Sprinkled? A library?
Oh, man. I don't know. I hate this question. Move on.
Oh,
next.
Wow. Can't
you
even get can't
so
give
well.
Us a dignified
I
answer.
Mean, you said
all
parking
right, here
lot.
We
you
go.
Can't top that.
That was totally fictional. Don't do that, please. What's the longest amount of time we could stand being apart? It's a good question. That's a good
together.
That's a good
like,
question to ask right now.
Let's
I feel like now,
find
after
out.
This is done, we'll definitely test that. Weeks, months, who cares? I don't know. I feel like the longest I've been away from you is probably 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, that seems
same
right.
with you. I think as of recent, end of last year, you traveled a lot and you were away for weeks on end.
I was away for months, but I would come home every little period of time for a night or two.
Yeah,
so
you had little pop-ins here and there.
Yeah, that fixed it. I don't know. I'd rather answer about how long we could be together because that's a test we're taking right now, by the way.
Oh, how sure. I mean, everybody in their fucking entire family slash in their
tests of monogamy are going through this right now. How long can you really be cooped up with somebody?
Good Lord. I know. And we seem to cycle like once a week we have to have an argument.
Yeah.
So.
A healthy one.
Yeah.
Nothing violent.
Once a week we're on a
couple
name calling
sessions and we're over it.
Yeah. You want to give one now?
Yeah. Let's give the listeners a real go for it.
Okay. How did you spend a typical childhood day? That's kind of a fun one. Let's do summer, right?
Summers were always with a jam because you didn't have to go to school. I grew up, my parents were always like, you know, they wanted the outside time. You know, I always had kind of time where they pushed me outside, go outside. So it'd be like, I rode my bike a lot, go play sports with other kids. You know, I had a middle school across the street from my house. So we'd go play baseball on the baseball diamond there. You'd go and, I don't know, throw frisbee around, be active, ride your bike, you know, all over town. And then probably wind it down at the house, play with toys, play video games, eat junk food, and then stay up late and watch movies and, I don't know, be mischievous.
Fun.
I wish I could do that now. Actually, I have been doing that now.
I was like,
minus the play baseball and ride my bike. I feel like everything else, except I'm not playing with my toys. So.
Or your friends, but yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Tear.
Well, you are playing with your toys. You just built a Legos.
I did build a Lego, yes. Yeah. A Lego set. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. This is hard to answer because each age was totally different, right?
Pick an age.
Well, I'm gonna pick, you know, like the tween years.
Oh man. I'd go to the mall.
No, well, actually, sure, yeah, that was a thing. You might get dropped off for a few hours or something. But no, I remember a lot of like I grew up in Florida, South Florida, so I remember a lot of being in the pool. Mm-hmm. Be in the pool all day. You'd have your music out there. I remember the summer of Alanis Morissette, just playing that on repeat all day, jumping in the pool with your friends. Then probably some, God, Barbie dolls or something. It's kind of like you. Just play with my toys for a while. And then night swims. That was the big shit in summertime was
night
you
swim.
Could night swim. So, and you'd turn the light on in the pool and it had this eerie, cool glow. And like your parents were tired, so they would leave you alone. You could just go night swim with your friends or whatever. That was always a big fun thing.
That does sound fun. See, we're both yearning for these things. God, what it wouldn't give to be 13 again.
Yeah, but if you gave me a pool with a light in it right now and we're like, go night swim, I'd be like, oh, this was fun for 5 minutes. That wouldn't do it for
cool.
me.
Cool. I like that. Painted quite a picture there. All right, let's do one more and then we'll wrap this baby up. Is it more important for a couple to have great conversation, lots of laughs, or great sex? I would say all of the above.
I know. I don't know how. I think those are all important elements.
I think
they
all have an
out.
Important kind of, you know, structure to a good relationship.
Okay. I do also, though, have a belief that people might have a good relationship with only conversation and laughs.
That's true.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I think it's possible.
I think it's possible. I mean, I guess, though, that there's the underlying people have needs and wants and desires as well. So it's like, are those
or
just solely
they?
Being met
maybe
through
they
talking?
Don't. There are asexual people. Like, maybe you don't have these desires. And
yeah,
maybe
that's
you're
true.
Paired with somebody that doesn't. Maybe you even have an open marriage where one person can't or won't and the other goes
true.
Out and does their thing. But your
sure.
core relationship is
can't
all
disparage
about
against that.
Support via conversation. And to me, conversation and laughs are kind of the same. Because
laughs
we like
are
to
good.
Laugh.
Laughs are real good.
Maybe there are serious people that don't laugh as much. I don't know.
Well, I feel bad for you because laughing's fun.
True.
And you should laugh more.
Yep.
And we hope all of you laugh, at least get a laugh or two when you listen to this show.
I don't know. We talk about quarantine, dude.
We talked about fun shit today. We talked about like retro TV and...
You're welcome.
Being cool kids and having fun. I mean, hope it's like conjuring good memories in your brain.
I was super not a cool kid. I just want to put that
I wasn't
there.
Either, but I did have fun. And I think that's the thing is we're all like wanting to have fucking fun again.
Yeah.
And nobody knows how to. We have to find our fun. Our old conventional ways of fun have seemed to gone.
Way to end this on a laugh, Tom.
Yeah, I hope you laughed at that. But
let's get out quick.
All right, let's kick this one out. Thank you for listening. This is our 7th episode. We're going to keep doing these. We do these on a weekly basis. Appreciate everybody listening to the listeners of the Ono Radio Show. Thanks, Owen and the gang, for letting us again be on the channel.
We have always kind of go out with a song, so I'm going to play this song as we go out. This is a shocker coronavirus song parody. And this guy's name, well, his YouTube name is Five Times August. That sounds like a band a 14-year-old girl would listen to. But this is a parody of the song I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, which was actually a 90s Aerosmith song talking about, like,
fun.
You know.
Back in the 90s.
I remember that. Armageddon. It was in that movie. Remember that?
Yeah, and even these childhood stories. This was a very 90s episode.
Yes, it was very 90s. So, hey, thanks for listening. We appreciate you. And stay safe out there. Wash your hands. Don't drink bleach. And go watch Dinosaurs and Little House on the Prairie. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
I should be at work, but instead I'm sleeping. Everybody's quarantining, washing hands and overeating. Now we spend our lives sharing lots of memes and watching all the shows we've already seen. And every moment spent inside, we should really be reading. I don't want to waste my time. I know it's only been a week, but I miss the days when I could go and do anything. But if everybody stays inside, the better chance we'll stay alive and get back the days when we can go and do anything. We had soccer games and parent-teacher meetings, all delayed now every evening. We're doing puzzles and spring cleaning. Kids are arguing and fighting more than ever. Every day we stay in here, feels like we'll be here forever. Forever and ever. I don't wanna waste my time.